Fine.
Hey, Martin, how are you doing?
Fine. You?
I'm doing, yeah, fine.
So your update was all okay? Did
Yeah,
you?
it was m mostly successful. It was one of those things where, like, when it first finished, we're like, nothing went wrong. This is amazing. And then over the next few days, stuff would pop up, but we've been able to address everything so far. So, mostly
Okay.
successful.
But from what release did you upgrade? From
From Poppy to Sunflower.
Okay. So it's ORS.
That's a pretty big jump.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a lot. We had to transition from LDP to MetaDB. We had to transition onto the RTR authentication, all of this for this upgrade. But we spent most of last year getting everything ready for it. So, but it went really smooth considering all the moving parts. When
But you're now in Sunflower, no copy there. That's what you
yeah.
said, I think. Okay. And have you any progress regarding Eureka?
No, we have not even thought about Eureka the whole time we've been working on all this. The closest we've gotten to thinking about it at this point is I went into Stephen Pimpel's office yesterday and was like, "We need to start thinking about Eureka." That's kind of where we're at with it. So,
You think about
okay.
it, I'll drive you nuts.
Didn't say I wanted to, but at this point, I don't really know. We were planning on trying to go to Eureka with Trillium, but with the Kong stuff that is happening, I don't know. We might try to do this a copy thing again, one more version. I don't know. I need to talk to the other self-hosters about it and see what they want to do.
Oh, okay.
Where are you guys
Well,
at with with Sunflower?
we're not live on Folio already, but we are
That's right.
planning to go live on Sunflower the copy in
Yeah.
August.
Okay. I think it, especially if you're not doing an upgrade, I think it should work really well for you guys.
Well, someone. We do also have to do the upgrade to Eureka, so and yeah. And I think even people that are going live, I think the biggest issue they're having is the capability sets.
Well,
Not what they mean.
not on our version, because we're still doing Okapi, so we still have the old permission sets and everything. So
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Martin. Oh, well, yeah, I hope it's when we are going to switch to Eureka, I hope there will be some kind of best practices with these capability sets.
Yeah.
They've kind of like the only group that was working on them is the user group, but they kind of pulled out with it. They were focusing a little bit on migration, and people weren't showing up. And as far as I know, they really haven't done anything else with it. So people have been kind of going on their own. Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, with me, it's just kind of hard. Like, I wish they had the descriptions of what the capabilities were because they are in the metadata in the UI, but that would make things a little bit more helpful. We did nothing broke yet, though. We did upgrade to Sunflower on Sunday.
Oh, hey, you guys are right there with us.
And actually, we haven't had any issues. We had one integration that we missed, that went down with, but it was for overdrive, so who cares? But that got fixed fairly quickly, and we had an issue with our database getting locked up, but that wasn't Eureka. That was something weird with data import, because it was only the data
We
import
had
app.
a lot of this was during our testing phase, so we were able to take care of this before we actually went live, but we had a lot of data import database lockups also. And so if you want to get your people to compare notes with our people, we might be able to. Off the top of my head, I'm not recalling what we did to solve it, but I do know that we spent about 2 weeks there during our testing, where every time we tried to run any kind of import, it would freeze things up.
Okay, I'll let them know. They seem to be able, yesterday they were able to clear it up,
Yeah.
and so far, knock on wood, we haven't seen anything else. I mean, I'll be honest, we're used to really odd data import issues. Like, we hammer data import like there's no tomorrow. So, like, it seems like everyone else is like, oh yeah, data import runs great. How's it for you? Yeah, we crashed it 3 times today.
It really depends on the scale of your institution, I feel like, or like how many records you're dealing with, you know. I mean, with a lot of the imports that people are running, it's, you know, it just runs just fine. But, you know, we've done some really massive migrations and stuff and tried to use data import for it. And we've gotten it to work, but all right, one thing is you turn off replication on the database. That has a huge impact on the performance of data import. So if you shut replication off during the import window, it helps tremendously.
So what we did, and I'm not sure if they're still doing it or not, because we've had to, I mean, our big load from EBSCO, which is our ebooks and a lot of our journals we get like once a year, is about 300,000 to 400,000 items. And Jenny, the animation group, take care of that. They actually, before even Bulkhead was doing pre-chunking, she was doing chunking ahead of time for so that she could piece feed in. And she doesn't even really, I won't say doesn't like, but there's not robust enough features around the chunking feature within Folio that she still does a lot of chunking outside of it because she can't see where it errored and then rechunk it and send all the ones that errored through. But when we originally got set up, and this was back on Kiwi, we had massive data import issues. Probably, as you were saying, with the sync, the database sync, what they ended up doing was creating a second inventory module for us. So data import only hit that inventory module, and then the rest of Folio hit another inventory module, and then they sync the data between the data import module to the production module. So it
That
was this
sounds a bit awkward.
weird.
I don't know.
Yes. I mean, I'm glad I didn't have to deal with it, and I'm not the one that had to be the administrator of this. I don't know if they're doing it anymore, but I know that was one of the things that they originally set up for us, because every single time, even small files, when automation sent them to data import, it would bring the system down to a crawl. And this was the only way they could figure out how to do it, that data input would be reliably stable for automation, but not bring the rest of our Folio environment down to a crawl.
That's real. I'd really be interested in knowing how they did that, like how they performed matching and stuff. I mean, if you were sure that you were bringing in new instances, you know, that you didn't already have in your system, I could see that working pretty seamlessly. But if you felt like you had to do any kind of deduping or integration, there would be a lot more problems to solve.
Yeah, and I don't know if at that time if we were or not. Jen would probably know the details around it a lot more than I would. I just remember one of our IT people going through the setup on a call with me, and I'm just like, whoa. But yeah, I'm like, oh, cool. I'm like, hey, if it works, I don't care, but
Yeah, there's a lot of things like that. Just get it to work.
I just get it to work. I don't care. See, if you become a hosting provider, you're going to deal with all this BS.
You know, I just remember as a developer, It's like you don't just want it to work. You want it to work and be confident that it's going to continue to work in the future, and that if when another developer comes along and looks at it, they're not going to be like, "Who wrote this?" You know, and then but your customers are just like, "Look, I just need this to happen now, and you guys can sort that out later." And now that I'm like moving away from development and more into like the customer side of things, I get it. I'm like, you know, I hear the developer saying, "Well, that's not the way we want to do it." And I'm like, "Look, we need something. We need something that's working."
Yeah, exactly. And we need it fast and cheap.
And they're like, "Well, have you seen my paycheck? It's cheap."
The most famous quote that I have from a coworker of mine was, anytime anyone asks him, "Oh, is this possible?" He's like, "With enough time and money, anything is possible." That was
Yeah,
his answer every single time.
that is my boss's philosophy. Is it's always doable. It's just people want to pay for it.
You can have it fa
Yeah.
you can have it, was it fast and cheap, but not exactly what you want, slow, expensive, and exactly what you want, or you're going to have to compromise in both places. Or there's another way, something along the lines, somebody else's way. But anyways,
All right, can y'all see my screen? Yeah. Okay. So I thought it seems like the plan for the tri-council meeting is that each one of the councils is going to give an update on what they're working on. And for the product council, we're asking each one of the working groups to kind of give an update on what they're working on as the product council's update on what the product council is working on. So I thought if it's cool with you guys, I mean, we could do this out of band if y'all would prefer, but I thought it might be a good idea to just take a second to talk about what we'll talk about when we do that part of the update. So, any ideas on how to formulate that? I thought maybe just a milestone slide where we just kind of hit these milestones and with the dates and
Yeah, I think that's a good idea, a good start.
Okay. Let's see. Yeah. I mean, we don't need to go on for a very, very long time. So, I mean, is that enough right there? I mean, I feel like if we identify what the deliverable is and the date that we're going to deliver it and talk for a second about what that deliverable is, I mean, do y'all think that's a sufficient presentation?
Well, I mean, we talked about the CDDF and the Tri-Council before, so everyone should have a notion of what it is we are talking about. So you don't have to explain everything from the beginning. And maybe the other councils don't remember exactly what the DIP was. Maybe one should say about what exactly the DIP would mean in the CDDF, but I think that's it. I mean, two or three sentences, and then show the milestones.
Okay, milestones. Oh, one thing I was thinking might be a good idea. We've talked a lot about wanting to potentially collaborate with efforts in the other councils if they're doing work on CDDF, and this seems like it would be a good opportunity to express to the other councils that we want to do that, and just kind of make a plug for the idea that we could maybe have some joint meetings sometimes.
Yeah, but wasn't it also a milestone?
There are
I think we have a milestone that we want to discuss with the other councils about that, I think.
we do have
To the
specific
CC, yeah.
dates where we want to go to the other councils to talk to them, but I guess what I'm talking like the work that Jen, I don't even know if they're still doing this, but a month ago or so, the technical council was going through work to try and see if they could identify the maintenance right cost of each module or something along the something motivated by the CDDF. And so, touching base with them on that, periodically, it seems like it would be good. I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Okay, cool. Nice alliteration there, cross-council collaboration. Okay. Well, I mean, what do y'all think? Is that sufficient? Those three slides like that? It'd probably be about 5 to 10 minutes.
I think that's fine because we're not the only ones saying something. I mean, we don't want to take up a huge amount of time, and it gives them a general idea of outline.
That's true. It needs to be more like 5 minutes because, if every one of the working groups takes 5 minutes and we have like a bumper on the end, that's 20 minutes for the product council. We got three councils, so.
Exactly. So short, sweet, to the point.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate y'all talking that through with me. I can get those slides put together. All right. So what we were doing previously is we have these three documents here. We have, nope, not that one. We have the original DIP proposal that was given to I think the Tri-Council. I don't remember the context, but last spring.
I believe so, yeah, it was a tri-council.
And then we have this document right here, which is the DIP outline that was is embedded in the CDDF. So this one it has a lot of elements that are integrated with the larger concepts of the community-directed development framework. And then this document does a comparison of those two to try to draw our attention to the ways in which they're different. The thinking being that if we are making a minimally viable DIP, that in some ways it might be more similar to the original proposal than to the one that we see in the CDDF, but we'd like to make some conscious decisions about, what we want this MVP to look like. So I think this probably is misnamed. I don't think this one is yet the MVP. This is the CDDF version. And then well, I guess after we get all of our notes together, we can create the third version of it, which would be the MVP.
So I saw last time I wasn't there, but I saw that in the notes you just summarized what you discussed about each section and how the I say how the MVP should look like or what we could transfer to the MVP or leave away.
Yeah, though I do, I hate to edit these notes, but I really think this is misleading, because this is MVP, but we really aren't talking. I mean, it said MVP would on the document, which is why we did that, but we're really talking about the CDDF version. So yeah, we would go over what the original one had, what was in the CDDF version, and then we would kind of continue to talk about what we felt like, our new version should have. Yeah, we started saying CDDF at some point. Okay, cool. Yeah, that's exactly right. And we didn't get all the way through. So we had these sections to continue on. So if it's cool with you guys, do you want to just dive back in and look at those sections and see what we think of them?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's break things.
Cool. All right. So let me publish this. All right. So one of the things that we spoke about last time, the last section that we hit on was this resourcing model. And the original MOUs can be used to fund a DIP, and the process is coordinated by the CC. And the CDDF proposal, the funding would be handled via development score and support scores and resource points. So this it seemed like the discussion was kind of leaning towards this idea that, all of this requires so much additional infrastructure that it doesn't really seem like it can be part of like a minimally viable version of the DIP.
Right.
Maybe MOUs can be where we just kind of provide an avenue for funding. But the question was raised, do we even feel like the minimally viable DIP should address funding at all? I am interested in what both of y'all think about that. I have mixed feelings on it, and I guess I'll just express those mixed feelings. I think that one of the areas that complicates the DIP process more than anything else is the funding piece. So if we're looking for simplicity, not handling funding definitely makes it simpler. But I also think that the funding piece is the part that provides an incentive for participation with the DIP. And I worry that if we roll this out without any reason for people to participate with it, that it won't take off. People won't want to do it. I'm not really sure why people would want to engage in the DIP process if they don't get anything out of it, I guess.
Yeah, first of all, I think for the MVP, what definitely can be left out is the option to fund, to do the funding via the folio organization.
Okay.
I think this is really, maybe this is too much. I think too much overhead, as you said. I mean, you also in the CDDF proposal, you introduced the possibility to either fund via folio org or via the or go directly to the community development team. I think this option also cannot be part of the MVP. So I think the most that the MVP can do about funding is documented, maybe. So that you can, or the, I mean, the MVP as a document or as a plan can document who is funding what and so on, or who is willing to contribute to funding. And maybe as a process, this would be then maybe the some of the stakeholders or maybe one of the councils, they could act like an how do you say that? Like a intermediary that can just try to find ways of funding for such a piece for the DIP. If the funding is not fully established, I hope it was clear.
Okay, so I like
So.
that because it would help us make decisions in the future if we had been documenting these funding things. So much of what we're talking about right now is based on just guesses about how things are working without actual data. And so it would be nice to have some kind of mechanism that allows us to collect the data over time.
Yeah, I think this would be a real benefit to compared to what we have now. I mean, only the documentation of the funding would be a benefit, I think.
I agree.
Thomas, do you have anything to add?
No, I agree 100%. Like, I think not trying to find funding, but documenting where the funding is coming from, and not maybe not even actual dollars, but just man hours spent, doing something might be helpful as information later on down the road when we actually do start paying for things out of pocket. We'll kind of have a better sense of how much it takes to get one of these features off the ground.
Okay. The reason I wanted to start with the discussion of funding is because the first section that we're supposed to look at this time is the RFP section, and I think whatever decision we make about funding is directly going to impact how we handle this part right here. But let's see. All right. In the original DIP, the RFP issuance is mandatory. The whole thing kind of centers around this idea that you get to this certain part of the process and a RFP is created to bring developers into development, like kind of coordinate between the desire to get this work done and the people who can get the work done. Execution assumes contractor delivery coordinated by the Folio organization. So this is not MVP New DIP. This is CDDF. Introduces a conditional RFP step, either it's issued, either you issue a RFP or the community development team can grab it, and it ends up on the marketplace. So I'm going to bring this stuff over right here. Do that. Seems like the font is big. Whatever. Okay. So neither, I mean, my initial instinct hearing both of those is that neither of these seem like the right approach for the MVP.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the document you also already said that apart from these two ways, we have this third way that already exists that is funding somewhere besides. And I think this is the only option for the MVP.
Because until we can get an internal funding model, it's going to be either the EPM teams, via EBSCO, or it's going to be German libraries or index data doing the work.
All right. Yeah, so if the MVP is not going to address funding, it likely cannot address the coordination of RFPs either. Okay. I mean, that does significantly change things. Let's think about how, I mean, so instead of coordinating the RFPs, once the development proposal has been codified, we can post it to a marketplace, and just allow the document to communicate to the world that here are some people who want this development done. And then it's just organic between those people and, providers to connect outside of the context of our process. But we just hope that the process, that the DIP process is able to document what happened with that, who did the work, do we, I mean, what, yeah, okay. I have questions, but I'm just gonna stop there real quick. Does that sound right? I mean, we aren't issuing RFPs, but we're getting the dip done and we're publicizing it, and it becomes like this marketplace idea.
I think so, but the thing is, though, too, is I think what the problem is like when we initially start this, we're going to be coming from a mo we're going to be used in a model where people are going to be bringing basically dips to us that were already decided on and planned by an outside vendor and are another organization, i.e., Grinnell goes to EBSCO and says, we want this new module. And then EBSCO will come through and
Do the dip.
do the dip and do all the other stuff, but it'd be after the fact of us talking to them, sort of thing. And I think at some point in time, and it could be sooner earlier in the cycle or later on in the cycle, we want to switch it that it becomes more of the community creating the dips, putting them into a marketplace, and then being picked up
Yeah.
by vendors and other people. And we might be able to do that now as well. We might be able to say we want every SIG to pick one of their top five and go through the dip process for that top five and start up a marketplace where those are placed. I mean, it might not, it might, it's probably, and it's not going to mean that they're going to be developed, but at least they'll get marketplace starting to, or this whole process moving into more of a demand instead of a, this is what we're doing. Like, I don't know. The words make more
Yeah,
sense in
yeah.
my head, put that
So I think this really aligns with one of the things I'm asking myself. How does this MVP dip relate to what we or the PC does with the top five priorities? I mean, if I understood correctly, the six are now or now asked to refine their top five priority issues, Jira tickets, to be UX prod or be implementation ready, so to speak. And then this is more or less the same thing. I mean, if you what they are doing is just having the description of what should be done, maybe. But actually, if we look at the first steps of the dip, this is more or less it's the same. I mean, the first steps are getting a proposal or writing up a proposal of what should be implemented. And I think it's more important even for the MVP dip to align these two things, so that because with the MVP we want to have a simple implementation of the dip, and if we would do it in parallel to the priorities things, then it's maybe not, yeah, it complicates things maybe, or it's not for the people who would have to write up these priorities issues and the dips, they maybe would say, well, it's like doing things twice.
I'm getting a phone call that I have a pre-approved loan for $75,000.
Oh man, you could fund a dip.
I could. Too bad it's a scam.
Hey, you know what? The dip might be too, for all.
It's possible. I mean, everything is pop. I mean, the community has gone through so many different iterations of things. It's very well possible that in a year we're just like, okay, you know what? This isn't working this way. We have to do something else. I mean, That's kind of how life is half the time, right?
So, I don't know if either of y'all play video games at all. I don't play a ton of them, but one of them that I did play was Skyrim. It's a great game. Came out in 2011. People still play this game. And I think it was with Skyrim. Maybe it was with Fallout, but the company that made that, Bethesda, created a marketplace that they embedded in the game for mods, for people who wanted to kind of build mods on the side. And I remember there was all this kerfuffle, there's this huge drama that came because initially it was just a marketplace where people could share the mods. And then they started introducing this concept of like paid mods, where like people could like start charging for the mods. And, you know, of course, because they're providing this platform, you know, they're taking money from each exchange. And so this monetization, the money aspect of it, was overlaid over the marketplace after the marketplace was introduced and rolled out. And the reason I'm sharing this is because I think that it is possible, if we do have a vision for the way that the community interfaces with, you know, development, if our vision is that it will end up someday coordinating funding and, you know, allowing pooling and having this more sophisticated approach, I do think it would be possible to introduce a non-monetary marketplace that just is a platform for connecting people with needs with people with development resources, you know, to after the fact come by and overlay a more monetary control over that in the future. I don't know. What do y'all think about that? Kind of a multi-step approach.
No, I
I'm
think
not.
that's. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Sorry, I'm not seeing that there is a monetized marketplace can exist within Folio at
Okay.
least at the moment, because module or app. I mean, it would be on an app level, I think, maybe in the future. And app development of apps is at least at the moment, I think, far too expensive to monetize developing apps through a marketplace.
I was gonna say, but there is already a monetized app within Folio.
Which one?
Which one?
eReserve Plus.
Okay, this
So,
is what is it? Is it an App Square app? Or
no, eReserve Plus is actually an outside company, and that's one of the things. Like I look, they are an outside company that shoot. Let me find it.
a Reserve Plus.
I believe they're here. It is. They are based in Australia. They're actually, I mean, they have a really cool product. But the product is actually web-based. It's an outside. They have a web-based interface, and it interfaces with your content management system, and it's basically like a competitor to Aries, but more on the e-reserve side of it, not so much on print reserve side of it. But they actually started working with EBSCO and wrote a module that pulls their current user interface and admin interface that's in their web portal directly into the Folio interface. And with the idea that later on they might be able to leverage some of the data that's already in Folio within their app. Like if you put something on print reserve, it could copy the metadata over directly from inventory into their app. So it is, but in order to use the app, you have to pay them for their service. And the majority of the interface from this app is their web service just ported into Folio. So I said there's already a monetized app in Folio. And I
Well, I mean, also the knowledge base stuff. I mean, that could be kind of considered this the same thing, right? You know, because you know you could connect that up with EBSCO stuff if, right?
If you pay the subscription service for it. So, I mean, I think the whole idea behind a marketplace, I think twofold is a good idea. I think having a marketplace where libraries and institutions can go and set, and I think this is what Kona does and what Harry was kind of alluding to in Tri-Council was having a marketplace where there's 40 tickets in there or 40 dips in there, and you say this one needs $40,000 in order to be done, and it's going to be adding this and this functionality to course reserves. And 10 or 15 libraries get around it and say, I'll pledge X to get this done. And then that work actually gets done. But on the flip side of that, I think that I know with the original idea, one of the original ideas with Folio itself was to have a marketplace within the Folio application.
No, you're absolutely right, but that's a different marketplace than what we're talking about. That's an after production marketplace, and we're talking about like a before production marketplace.
Which is the first one. But I think the aftermarket one is also a possibility, and people adding paid features and there is also a possibility. But then you also have to run into the hosting providers and that they'll actually allow the apps.
All right. I feel pretty good about this discussion. Do y'all mind if we move on to the roles and accountability one? In the original DIP, execution assumes a contractor-centric delivery model. Coordinators liaise with council stakeholders and contractors. In the CDDF, it explicitly distinguishes coordinator responsibilities, development team responsibilities, and emphasizes standardized Jira artifacts aligned with module owners and QA community development norms, not just contractor workflows. All right, so the idea is that what I'm essentially saying here is there was a lot of hand waving in the original document, just kind of saying it didn't really get into a lot of detail about it. It just kind of said, the con whoever takes a contract for this will coordinate with the stakeholders to figure out how this is done. Whereas there is this idea of like a stake, like a kind of a primary for each DIP in the CDDF version that's responsible for kind of shepherding the DIP through the process and acting as a point of contact or a liaison for the people involved and kind of being a person that represents the DIP to the councils and the community. And another thing that this section touches on, which I think was a really important improvement, is this idea that a DIP should reference specific Jira artifacts. Like it should be something that points at specific UX prods or specific things that, kind of say that DIPs need to connect up with our current process.
I think
I
that's
just for my part, this is one area where I think the CDDF approach is superior, probably even in the MVP, to the original DIP. I don't know. I mean, I think even in the MVP, it would be important to have, well, at the very least, I think it would be important to have a DIP reference specific Jira artifacts.
I agree.
I'm going to move this stuff over into our notes and then I did that wrong again. And then we can talk about what we want the MVP to have. But so we have one point of agreement. The next thing, well, let me see. MVP. It would be good for the MVP DIP to reference existing Jira artifacts. Now, what do y'all think about this idea of a liaison role and every DIP having like a person who's kind of like the face of the DIP?
I mean, theoretically, that would already be there now. I mean, if you look at the current process, when a Jira moves through the development process, it's being shepherded by a PO. And even when it goes to tech council, there's a PO doing it. I mean, we're not saying specifically that it has to be a PO, but more than likely, it would be the PO doing the same thing. It'd be the PO's responsibility to continually update PC on the progress of the work being done for that dip. If they need to split off anything else, as well as if they hit a road, a bump in the road and have to take a different course of action, X, Y, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I think that's perfectly reasonable.
What do you think, Martin?
I agree. I think it basically it will be just natural to have an someone being responsible for the dip.
The other one too is it doesn't mean, and we can get into the details later on, it doesn't mean that they have to come to a PC meeting every time something changes. It just means that I think we have to determine at some point in time how communication will be made to the PC on the progress of these things and how often it needs to be communicated.
What do we call the role? Coordinator, a dip coordinator.
I think, I mean, the main advantage of the dip, maybe, or the MVP dip here would be as well having it documented in a consistent way. I mean, having documented who is responsible for the dip.
Yeah, just like a standard development pipeline that, yeah, you're right. Okay. Do we have anything more to say about roles and accountability? I do think one thing that neither of the documents do that I would like to do is it would be good. So one of the things that we did that I think was really useful in when in the TC when we did the TCR process was we described the whole process, but then we identified all the roles in the process, and we had a separate section that was just roles where we listed out all of those, roles and described specifically their responsibilities, in the process. And I think that that's a useful way to kind of look at the same process two different ways, a more process like step oriented look at it. But then a role-based analysis of it can help get rid of ambiguity, I think.
Yeah. And it also is a good reference for somebody stepping into that role because you could say this is your role, and they could easily go to that document and see what the responsibilities are. My caffeine is starting to
These morning meetings, it's always like that with me, where I kind of start off, I'm like, do I have to do this? And then I'm like drinking coffee the whole time, and I'm like, all right.
Yes, you have to. You must. You must.
Roles and roles. But I guess, what is it? Is it like, for you, Martin, is it like 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
It's about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, so I'm
Oh my
beginning
God.
to I
Yeah.
mean, you're just going to towards 100%, and I'm already declining.
Yeah.
Our caffeine level is doing this, and yours is doing this.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which means that we're probably hitting at a
Yeah.
cross point. So
Yeah. At some point in the meeting, we're going to be in the exact same spot.
I think I'm already too much, too way too much down. So, no chance.
we're almost to the hour. In fact, well, I don't know. Yeah, we probably do one more of these, I guess. Life cycle closure resource reclamation. So I imagine there'll be definitely some differences here. So in the original DIP, dormant or sunset states exist. No explicit mention of reclamation of unused community resources. In the CDDF version of the DIP, explicitly states unused community resource points are returned to the pool if a DIP is dormant or sunsetted. I don't know if we need to address this at all in the MVP DIP because we aren't dealing with resourcing.
What
We
we
have
have to, oh, I'm sorry.
no, go ahead, Martin. You're probably going to say about the same thing I was too was going
I
to, so
think
go
the
ahead.
important points are the dormant and sunsetting states.
You said exactly what I was thinking. I think we hit that cross point.
Yeah. Okay.
In the MVP dip. We will not need to deal with resourcing, but the dormant, explicit dormant slash sunset doormat,
The doormat.
dormant, sunsetting, sunset states, should be included. Okay. Anything more about this life cycle piece? I think the way that I'd like to see this happen is I'd like to well let's see if we can knock the last one out and then we can talk about next steps. Conceptual framing. In the original DIP, it emphasizes flexibility, discretion, and council judgment. Resourcing and maintenance concerns are advisory. In the CDDF version of the DIP, it frames the DIP as a living, score-driven, execution-ready artifact, stronger emphasis on measurability, accountability, predictability, and throughput. What does all this mean? Let's take a look at that section. Delivery and integration. Upon completion, deliverables are reviewed by relevant SIGs and councils. Code is merged and documented. So yeah, the role of a DIP during the implementation phase is interesting. I do think there is some virtue to being able to like see the whole thing through, like having a documentation artifact that exist along with a development effort all the way through until the end of development, or at least until release, an initial release, I guess, might be a good point of termination for it. But it's not an
So,
immediately clo or sorry, go ahead.
are we saying that the module or whatever work was spec'd out by the DIP cannot be released until it's signed off by basically the PC?
So initially that is that is what this process implied. Now that was much more reasonable when community funds were being put forward, because like you kind of have to pay for a say, right? So if you're throwing money at it, then sure, you should be able to say, no, this isn't what we want, but it seems pretty presumptuous. And again, like not the sort of thing that people are going to want to involve themselves with if they go to pay this money to have something developed and then the PC is just sitting there or the community governance is sitting there saying, well, we get to have final sign off on this. That I just don't see that working.
So we could modify it for this version that instead of saying that we have final sign off in order for it to be placed into the release, we could say something along the lines that we have final say if the DIP is considered completed. and can then enter a maintenance cycle, or if it is considered incomplete and still needs further work. Because
So
then
maybe something
that
like final sign
would.
off by the council should be a matter of documentation and not control.
I think at this point, yes. And then once funding starts flowing through the councils, I think that can easily be flipped.
Funding for DIPS. If in the future funding for DIPS does come through community mechanisms, then final sign off can become more I'm gonna say less perfunctory. Maybe. Okay. All right.
What does perfunctory mean?
Like kind of just for show.
I was wondering about something different. Did we have in our two versions of the DIPS, the case that or did we specify what happens if a DIP is being proposed, but it just kind of stalls in the RFP phase, sort of? I mean, if someone proposes at like for example the six now propose DIPS by specifying their priorities, and there's never someone who volunteers to fund such things. Do we have, I mean, does this dormant state occur? I think we only talked about that if the if sort of the development fails, then it gets dormant. But what if the if there's never, I mean, should there actually, I'm wondering if there should be some kind of garbage collection that just pulls out DIPs that linger on like for a year, 2 years, whatever, and that you have to, I mean, like a garbage collection mechanism, you have to see if it's still valuable and still valid, still a valid DIP, a valid functionality that should be or that is mentioned there. So maybe some kind of evaluation or whatever.
I mean,
I think we
could we?
didn't have such an idea in our proposals.
Yeah. So that kind of gets, I think that's a great point. I do think I've captured that here. We need to define all conditions that would trigger the dormant slash sunsetting phase. For instance, if a DIP stalls out in earlier phases of the process. You're exactly right about that. And I think that there's kind of two things that need to happen. We need to find out what between like the newest version, what we've just done, like what we want to keep and get rid of between the two DIPs, and kind of write that out. And then we might need to take another look at that and be like, how, do we want to add anything new to this? Like, is there something that we still feel like can be part of the MVP that we didn't think about in the first two versions? And like, so I think this is a great instance of that, is that, having some documentation in there that defines better, some of these processes, probably should be added to this. So, what I'd like to do is for our next meeting, I'd like to take these notes that we have and actually try to come up with a new version of the DIP that takes all this stuff into account. And then once we're able to look at that, ask ourselves what needs to change about this. And then, once we, improve that with one round of improvements, I think that's something we could probably take to the councils.
Okay, so is it you? So you propose you want to come with a proposal for an MVP dip, or is it just something that we all should write up?
I'm open to either option. I like doing work in a group, but not everyone's into that. But if we wanted to just create a Google document next time and just start moving things over and wordsmithing in a group, I'd be happy to take that approach. If y'all want me to come up with a draft on my own and just bring it next time, we can do that too. So what are y'all's thoughts?
I think doing it together, Google Sheet is, would be fine.
Okay.
So next time is next week, or
No.
because next week is the Tri Council meeting, so I was wondering if we have a meeting next week.
Well, I mean, I guess there's no reason why we couldn't meet next week. I could go either way. We're canceling other PC meetings, so we're not, for instance, doing the Tuesday meeting next week. I'd be open to meeting. I mean, I want to make sure we hit our deadlines, so if we take too many weeks off, we might get behind, I guess. I don't know.
You also have the calming period too, so
Yeah.
that's the
That's true. The
long week.
following
Longer,
week we should not meet. So yeah, let's go ahead and meet next week.
okay.
Okay. All right, I'll adjust the calendar, make sure that we don't have a meeting on the calming week, but all right, folks. Well, thanks so much. Have a good evening, Martin. And
Yeah, have a good day.
I'm gonna go refill my coffee. Bye.
I'm gonna do the same and see what my co-worker wants. She probably broke folio on me.
Oh no. Good luck.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.